Welcome to Strong Black Legends, the show where we give flowers to the legends of Black film and television, brought to you by Netflix and Strong Black Lead. Each week, we talk with the folks that paved the way for us to imagine what was possible both on and off the screen. I'm your host, Tracy Clayton, aka the head of the Nappy Roots fan club. Yes, we are out here. Y'all know nothing about it, even though you should. The Nappy Roots crawled so Lil Nas X could fly. Yes, they did. Yes, they did. Just like all the episodes of Strong Black Legends, I have to start by practicing to be the kind of parent that I want to be one day. And that's the kind of parent that yells at you and asks you what you know about their favorite things. I refuse to let the ancestors down, so... I know y'all know about Bumper Robinson, but what y'all know about Bumper Robinson? Okay, let's take it back for a second. I mean, I know that this whole show is basically about taking it back, but I mean, you know what I'm trying to do here, right? Just rock with me. Just let me land. So it's the 90s because, duh, of course it's the 90s, and you're watching TV. You know, one of those thick TVs with the wood finish panels and the VHS players at the bottom? One of those. And you're watching a sitcom, and like all the best sitcoms in the 90s, it's filmed in front of a live studio audience. You see how I did that? You see? And so you're watching the show, right? And the actors are doing their thing, and the jokes are landing. Everybody's having a good old time. And then another character comes on the set. In 90s terms, this person is fine, okay? And you know that this person is fine because as soon as they step into a scene, we hear this noise from the studio audience. And you gotta make that sound for yourself, right? Because this person is that fine. Woo! Now, who is it that you see? Who's on your screen? Who just made your day a little bit brighter? Just listen to it again. Now, for me, I see every Black girl's 90s dreamboat of a man, Bumper Robinson. Bumper Robinson has been making all the girls swoon since his days as the sweet jock Dorian on A Different World and as the annoying male boy Ivan on Living Single, which is my personal favorite role of his as a woman of a certain age. Okay. But Bumper Robinson is not just a pretty face. He's a pretty voice, too. Whether you know it or not, he's been the voice of tons of animations from the beginning of his career in cartoons, video games, and movies. This man stays booked and busy, as the youth say. So, get ready. You might find yourself a little jealous, but I think that I did all of our younger selves from the 90s proud. Listen to my conversation with Bumper. We talk about where he got his name, his time on set at A Different World, and he gives me some voice acting tips for my inevitable voice acting career. Now you know who to blame. It's him. And I might have told him that he was my favorite light-skinned ex-boyfriend and he didn't even know it. Anything can happen. Enjoy! I am so thrilled to be here with one of my many ex-boyfriends from the 90s, Mr. Bumper Robinson.
Wow.
Hi. You didn't know that, did you?
No, I did not.
Well, look, let me tell you, we were in like a full-blown relationship since I can't even remember. Definitely hit its peak when you were on A Different World.
Mm.
Of course, of course. And you know, we'll get into that. I think that we had such a long relationship. One, because you worked in everything that I loved.
Mm-hmm.
But also you came into my life, Bumper Robinson, in the middle of like my light skin, curly hair phase.
Oh.
Everybody had one. If they tell you that they did not, you're lying.
That's funny.
But I have to confess that I cheated on you with Garfield from Shy.
Okay.
I don't know if you remember that group.
Mm-hmm.
Genuine.
Okay.
I'll Be Sure. And either Devontae or Dalvin from Jodeci.
Oh.
I can't remember which one.
It was probably Devontae because he had the green eyes. Was that it?
That was it.
Mm.
I don't feel great about it.
That cuts deep.
I understand. Thank you for being so forgiving.
Yeah, well.
I'm assuming that.
I didn't have much choice, did I?
See, that's how you do it.
Uh-huh.
That's how you get out of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So before we get into your really, really long and extensive resume, I want to talk about little bitty baby Bumper Robinson.
Mm.
You have to tell me how you got the name Bumper.
I used to bump into everything.
Really?
Yes, I did. And it was going to be Bumper Robinson or little black kid who trips and falls all the time. So my real name, I don't like a lot.
Yeah.
My dad gave me the name that he has, which is Larry.
Mm-hmm.
And I never really liked it. I always felt like that Larry was the dog in shows or the funny neighbor.
Hmm.
Never really liked it. So he didn't like it, decided that he should give it to me.
Uh-huh.
So I could wear it. But I'm glad that he gave me Bumper.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, were you just like a clumsy kid? Was it like some equilibrium stuff?
No, clumsy, equilibrium, everything.
Oh, are you still kind of clumsy?
No, I outgrew it, but not the name.
Oh, well, mm-hmm. I think it's a very great name.
Appreciate it.
You've been working since 3, 4, mm-hmm. 5? Four and a half.
Mm-hmm.
How did that happen? Were your parents just like, okay, this kid is too cute to not be in everybody's faces, so let's get him to some auditions?
No, actually, my family moved out from Cleveland, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
I was born in Cleveland. My dad decided to pursue his musical dreams in L.A. I went to a preschool where the owner of the preschool's daughter worked at a casting company. They were casting for a Bill Cosby Jell-O Pudding Pops commercial.
Wow.
And they were looking for a talkative black kid, and I was there talking.
And running into stuff.
Yes. So they took me into the commercial audition while I was supposed to be at preschool. My parents came to pick me up from the preschool, and I wasn't there.
Mm.
Lucky for the folks at the preschool, I booked the commercial because I think my dad probably would have torn the place apart had
right.
I not. So you couldn't get away with that today.
The preschool people were just like, let's just take this kid to mm-hmm. this. What? Mm-hmm. And everybody was alive after that. Nobody.
Yes, yes.
Wow, it was a different time.
This was a long time ago.
Mm-hmm. What's your earliest acting memory? Do you like remember being on the set?
Probably that. That and my first theatrical thing after that, which was a CBS movie that we call Cocaine and Blue Eyes with O.J. Simpson, where I played his son.
Wow.
So at that time, it was really incredible to work with Bill Cosby and then O.J. Simpson, and I had no idea what the future would hold.
Yeah.
So,
well, none of us are Miss Cleo, unfortunately.
Right?
Yeah.
Right.
At the time, being so young, did you have a sense that, like, wow, these are, like, giants in the acting industry, or they were just like really big, important people?
No, I don't think really. You know, I remember working with Bill Cosby. It scared me because that whole situation was a little bit overwhelming for me. I was great in the room in the audition, but the only thing I really cared about was the pudding pops once we got to set. So there was that.
Yeah, acting seems to be a really overwhelming thing, especially when you're like a child.
Mm-hmm.
And you did so much acting. Like, is it something that you enjoyed as a kid? Or
loved
was it just
it.
Like, you know?
Loved it. I mean, I was doing it before I could read, you know? So I have more memories of studio lots than like the schools that I went to. I went to public school, but you know, I remember certain studios before they had certain wings and certain parking structures and certain, you know, paint jobs. So growing up, like before I was even in high school, I was looking back on the city like, I felt old because of the work in that. But I have, like, when we worked on Webster at Paramount, next door, they were doing Family Ties. First job I did, sitcom-wise, was the Jeffersons.
Mm-hmm.
We worked next door to Different Strokes.
Oh,
Gary Coleman showed me the ropes as a 7-year-old, I think I was, where when the Universal Studios tour came through, taught me how to wave. Taught me how to smile.
Aww.
You know, so.
About how old was he then? Were y'all like the same age?
I think he was like 30. No, I'm playing. I'm not exactly sure how old he was, but
I was like, can I laugh at this?
Yeah, I know, right? No, he was young too, but
I'm
not sure.
Mm-hmm. Not only were you on television, you were on television with superstars, with veterans of the acting game.
Mm-hmm.
What is some of the best advice that you were given, aside from how to wave Gary Coleman?
Oh, yeah. You know, another lesson I can remember was my dad. There was an episode of actually Amen. Actually, we had Hammer on an episode. Well, he was MC Hammer at that point. And he was high on the totem pole. He was on top. And I was trying to be an aspiring rapper, drop out of high school. And he came on the show and was, you know, you know, trying to keep me in my place and have me chase the education in that. And the day after we filmed that episode, great crowd, Entertainment Tonight, everyone was, you know, it was a lot of coverage. And I had to come back for school. And my dad was walking with me. We were the only ones on set. They gave everybody else the day off. So I was walking through and it was like your football stadium being empty after the Super Bowl game. That's what it felt like to me. And he noticed me and he was like, what's wrong? And I was like, I know, it just feels, I'm down a little bit. And he was like, well, you know, you should enjoy this piece of it too. You can't live your life on the ceiling. And I was like, dang, you always got stuff to say, Dad.
You can't live life on the ceiling.
Yeah, yeah.
I like that.
That one stuck with me.
Yeah. I love that so much because so much of the craft of acting, I'm learning as someone who is not an actor at all. So much of the craft of acting is not just like learning how to like memorize your lines and like step into the feelings of another character, but you have to like make sure that you are like staying present and enjoying the moments like outside of the actual role. A thing that I'm really excited to talk to you about is how that sort of thing transfers into your voice acting, which I did not know you did until maybe really recently, but you've done a lot of voice acting. How did you get into that?
Well, I got to bring my dad up again. He used to always do a bunch of characters and crazy stuff. I would go back and forth with him, and he talked to an agent that I had at the time about putting together a tape for me. And I was like nine, and she was like, well, you know, they don't really use a lot of kids in the industry. They use adults for kids, so they don't have to do schooling and all that. And he was like, well, you know, I'm going to put together tape anyway. Sent it over to Hanna-Barbera, and I became the first Black Flintstone on the Flintstone Kids. Yeah. So that started then, and I've been lucky enough to be able to roll out of bed and go to work ever since.
Amazing.
Because it's
That's
different.
That's a blessing. Yeah. Yeah, because you've had a very varied career as far as like voice acting goes. You mentioned that you started on, I can't believe you were the first Flintstone kid. That's amazing, amazing. And of course, there's Transformers. What kind of cartoons did you watch as a kid?
Oh, everything. Looney Tunes, Mr. T, GoBots, G.I. Joe, all of them. I mean, there were not as many cartoons as there are now.
Yeah.
I mean, the variety that my kids have to be able to watch now is nuts. I mean, entire networks, cartoons all day long. I don't know what I would have done if I had that. But yeah, everything.
Yeah. Okay, this quick little exercise.
Okay.
So I'm going to describe for you a character, right? In my upcoming animated film. This is a young boy, 17, 18 years old or so, from Cleveland. Surprise, surprise. The year is 1986. He is in a store and he wants to buy a 20 ounce of orange soda.
Okay.
He's a little bit short. And he's trying to get the cashier to let him just like, you know, just like, give me this little thing, man.
He's how old again?
17.
17.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Was that the...
Yes, but okay, wait. I just realized it's way too easy. Okay, so instead of being
it's
a 17
really not.
Year old, it's not.
No, because it was sort of vague, but I was just going to have him harassing somebody at the store. But what, go ahead.
Well, see, I guess I imagine that like, that the descriptions of the parts are kind of vague, but I guess...
They are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm doing a great job, in other words. Okay, awesome. So instead of being a 17-year-old boy, this is a teenage animated elephant.
Okay.
Okay. Still in Cleveland. There's,
okay.
Talking elephants in Cleveland in my movie. It's going to be a great movie. So I'm the cashier. Hey, Mr. Elephant Man, this is 20 cents more. You don't have enough money for this soda.
Excuse me. I don't want to put you on a spot here, but you call me Elephant Man, and I'm only 17 years old, so... they're that.
You can have it for free. It's okay. That is amazing.
Thank you.
Wait.
Thank you.
You're welcome. This movie is going to be so good.
Right?
That was incredible. So we know that you are just like established in the voiceover world, but let's get back to some of your on-camera stuff in the 90s, because I feel like that's where we really, really get to see you on screen. 1992, The Jacksons, An American Dream. I watch every... Like, it's a holiday movie now. It comes on every Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Absolutely. I get to spend those 14-cent checks every year.
Ooh.
They're great.
Wow. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
I still sit and watch all 16 hours every year. Twice a year. So you played Jackie in American Dream. If you're listening and you don't know what movie we're talking about, how dare you? I'm not even going to tell you what it's about. You can go look it up. So you played Jackie Jackson of the Jacksons. Mm-hmm. Is it difficult or is there more pressure portraying someone who actually lived and is still alive versus a fictional character?
That's a good question. And yes, when they're on set looking at you, yes.
Right, because the family was there, right?
Yeah,
What was shooting that movie like?
That was amazing. The whole process of it was pretty crazy. The audition was crazy. The auditions were kind of Broadway-esque. I say that, never been on Broadway, but from what I've heard, we had to act, sing, dance, and then do choreography, all of which, while I was doing sitcoms and stuff, wasn't really a part of where I was, my mainstay was. But the filming it, we filmed in my senior year of high school. And I actually didn't get to go to my senior prom because we were working. Which
were
is,
you sad or
nah,
upset about that?
Nah. It's the trade-off, right? Like, again, I got to be on TV.
Yeah.
So,
also, prom is dumb. It's just a waste of money.
That's what I heard.
You met Jackie?
I did.
Did he give you any pointers? Like, okay, here's how you play me. Here's what to do.
I didn't meet him until after, which I was thankful for. Mm-hmm. But Jermaine was on set a lot. Mm-hmm. And Jermaine's son played him.
Right.
He plays dad. So, it was interesting. It was something that they, you know, once we were cast, they kind of trusted us with. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, a lot of the folks around, like our choreographer was Michael Peters, who had worked with the Jackson family, with Michael for years and years. So we were kind of molded into a lot of tape watching. And then just the feel of the family, like being around, you know, some of them they're a unique family, man. So, the largeness of celebrity that they had experienced for so many years was something that even having been on TV myself for all my life, it was just, even in preparing yourself for it, I don't think anyone could wrap their head around what it was like for a black family to be that large for so long, you know.
You touched on something that made me think of live acting. When you were on shows like A Different World and Living Single, those were taped in front of live audiences.
Yeah.
Do you enjoy live acting?
I like it a lot. I don't know if I have a preference. There's a different energy with a studio audience that I grew up in the sitcom era.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
And so I think that was one of the most depressing things about seeing it disappear because as a performer, again, not growing up on stage in theater, I didn't grow up with playing to the back of a room. Yeah. I grew up with playing to...
Wait, what does that mean? Playing
to the back of the back of the theater, like on theater. Mm-hmm. In theater, they say that you're supposed to play to the back row, back of the... You know, everybody has to be able to see, no matter their seat. But when you have a camera in front of you, you can be as subtle as you want to be, and everyone will see everything that you're doing. So... but I like the energy of a live audience. There's to me, especially in the sitcom realm, there's nothing like it, man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would love to see more come back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was such an amazing moment of black TV, sure, but like black sitcoms in particular.
Mm-hmm.
At one time, there was just so many different types of black families portrayed. And like now, I don't know that I can name a black sitcom aside from Black-ish and all... like Grown-ish and Mixed-ish and all the other issues out there. I don't know if I can name another one.
Yeah, they're the ish. Thank God for them.
Yeah.
It would be, it's slim pickings.
Yeah.
You know?
Why do you think that is? Why do you think the black sitcom went away?
Well, I think it left when theme songs left. And for whatever reason, when people decided that they had no time to listen to a 30-second theme song, I mean, and that was with every show, whether you were watching Hill Street Blues, whether you're watching The Cosby Show, whether you're watching Family Ties, those songs, you didn't want to miss that. And there was something about the event of going home and not having an option when to watch.
You had to be in front of that TV at 8 o'clock if you wanted to see whatever it was.
You know, we lost that somewhere.
Yeah.
And so we want to be fed quickly.
Uh-huh.
And for some reason, the coverage within sitcom, the amount of time it takes to wait for laughter from an audience, we don't even have time for that, it seems.
That is so real. That's really real.
Yeah.
And I am I'm guilty of being so impatient. Like,
me too.
When I'm binging something on a Netflix or a streaming service and it's like, do you want to skip the intro? Mm-hmm. Yes, of course I do.
But you know, I don't. If the intro's good, if the intro's good, like I love the theme song to Westworld. Mm-hmm. And I watch it and listen to that piano every single time.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Huh. You blew my mind with the theme song thing. Mm. Best theme song ever, period, in life. In my opinion, amen.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah.
That is like an entire church service.
Yes, it is.
Also, in the 80s, I feel like intros are like entire songs.
Mm-hmm.
Like a smooth, like 30 minutes.
Yeah, some of them were a little long. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Shout out to Good Times. Shout out to Good
Amen.
Times.
I mean, not, you know what I mean.
Yeah. Sure. Do you have a favorite theme song?
My favorite, I mean, I like the original Aretha Franklin version of Different World.
Ooh, yes.
That was hot.
That
was a hot one.
Also a good one to sing in the shower.
Absolutely.
I do that.
But I also like the instrumentals too. I mentioned Hill Street Blues. I also love the theme song to Taxi.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were some fun ones when you had like celebrities start to do their own.
Yeah.
Like Jamie Foxx did his, which was kind of cool. Latifah did hers on Living Single. Single. Uh-huh. Yeah, for sure.
T and Tamara did a season at least of their theme song.
That's right.
I remember.
Yeah.
So I'm so glad that you mentioned Aretha's version of A Different World because we have to talk about it. We have got to talk about you on A Different World.
Mm-hmm.
Dorian, oh my God. Oh my God, he was so fine, he was so sweet. And as soon as I think about A Different World, I think about two things. There's a Tupac episode.
Right.
And I can't remember if this is the same episode or not, but the moment when Dorian told Jada, what was
Lena.
Her? Lena, yes, yes, that he was celibate.
Yes.
That Jada's response was just so, so good.
Yeah, it was.
Did you feel like a heartthrob when you were on A Different World?
You know, I was fresh out of high school. Literally was just 18. Nah, not really, because I was working, you know, everybody on the show, I was the youngest.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was a freshman coming in, and supposedly, and I was a freshman. I felt like a freshman. Like, that literally was where my first year of college was, legitimately. Mm. I was going to UCLA part-time.
Oh, wow.
And I was working a lot with Debbie Allen. Actually, I was doing some apprentice directing behind the scenes. She was taking me through some courses of stuff. So I didn't feel like a heartthrob at the time, because my plate was kind of full with what I was doing there. And it was always super difficult for me to like parallel my life to the character that I was playing, which was very similar. I didn't have a lot of time to date. I didn't have a lot of time to, you know, and coming from set life to my regular life, like I was one who was ready to go to a basketball court quickly rather than try to go to the mall with everybody else and chase folks. So, but that was a long-winded answer to, no, I don't think I really did feel like that. No.
No.
No. Because everybody there was a heartthrob.
That's
right?
True. You know? That's true. I mean, you made out with Jada Pinkett for Pete's sake. So tell me about your most memorable episode of A Different World.
Probably for doing it, and then the life that it's had after doing it was the episode with Tupac.
Yeah.
I think it was called Homie, Don't You Know Me. And I don't ever remember names of an episode of any show that I've done, but that one in particular, because you know, I was 18, he was this huge hip hop star, and we were supposed to be at odds over character Lena, Jada, and he was great to work. I was kind of nervous, you know, coming in. I was like, you know, I grew up on TV. I wasn't from the streets or nothing. streets of, you know, Warner Brothers Studios and lots. He was really cool. He had actually invited me to a Poetic Justice screening afterwards.
Did you go?
I did.
Oh, my gosh.
I absolutely. How could I not?
That was going to be my follow-up question if you said
yeah,
that.
it was an incredible experience. He was great.
Yeah.
I was nervous that maybe we wouldn't get along. Maybe it would be, you know, but he was fantastic. I learned the depth of him, a little bit of the depth of him as an artist, you know. Mm-hmm. Able to come in and work in something that was completely different, you know.
Yeah.
There's
lots of reboots happening now. Would you do a reboot of Dorian on A Different World?
Why not? For sure.
All right.
Yeah, reboots are amazing. I'm glad they're finally coming around to us as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did see a bit of criticism, I guess, about all of the Black reboots that are coming out. And somebody was like, you know what, these reboots are great, but I wish that they would invest in new Black stories and new Black sitcoms and new Black movies. Does that move you any particular way?
Yes, it does. I can relate to that notion, but I think the reason that people feel like that is because we never really get this same sample size. You know, a lot of times people would, you know, people complain about, I don't want to see another slave movie. I don't want to see another. But the reason why I think people have that notion is because there's not enough to balance it.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's a good point.
If we are able to have new projects and then, you know, to watch shows continue to get redone, and they seemed to be, when all of the rebooting started, all shows that we weren't in.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we I think there's enough room on the freeway for lanes of the new shows and lanes of paying respects and you know, allowing the audiences to see where those characters have mm-hmm. gone or mm-hmm. can possibly, you know, go to in the future.
Yeah,
for sure. Because folks are still acting, that's for sure.
Yeah. Still out here.
Yeah.
Still grinding.
Yeah.
A reboot that I am living and absolutely holding my breath for is Living Single, mm-hmm. aka one of the best Black shows, one of the best shows, period, mm-hmm. of all time, in my humble estimation.
Mm-hmm.
Have heard Queen Latifah say flat out that Friends was just a complete ripoff of Living Single.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a thing that you have heard or that you feel?
I've heard it.
Yeah.
I have heard it. I don't know. I mean, mm-hmm. I know how people feel about formulas. Sitcoms in particular are formulas, you know, mm-hmm. Or they have been. I mean, you take The Honeymooners, and without The Honeymooners, you don't have King of Queens. You don't have Family Guy.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have the Flintstones. Mm-hmm. So I think imitation is the, you know, what is it? The biggest form of flattery.
Yeah.
It sucks because I feel like she felt and others felt like that as well, because we don't necessarily get the credit for mm-hmm. the origination of an idea. Mm-hmm. And that's where the problem is. It's okay if you copy. It's okay if you borrow, you know.
Just be real about
it. For sure.
Mm-hmm. So when you were on Living Single, you played the role of Ivan.
Mm-hmm.
This, as much as I love me some Dorian, I think this may be my favorite role of yours.
Really?
Yes.
Hmm.
And I mean, you know, like, I'm watching the show and I'm young and I'm not fully, like, radicalized or woke, as the children used to say. But, mm-hmm. you know, like, I'm watching this happen. I'm just like, this feels important some kind of how. It's so radical, and I hate that it is radical, but to see a young, handsome man chasing after Queen Latifah, who was gorgeous, but was not, like, conventionally, like, beautiful or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, usually it's always, like, some frumpy dude who has, like, the hot wife or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But here's young Ivan with his nose wide open, and Khadijah's like, go on somewhere. Child, mm-hmm. you're bothering me. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, this just feels different.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, maybe I can get me an Ivan too one day. I don't know.
That's funny.
You know, as I think about it, I feel like this show may have shaped the woman that I became.
Hmm.
Not that this is about me, but if anybody ever wants to hear me talk about that, I'm around. What was the vibe like on that set?
That vibe for me was incredibly comfortable.
Yeah.
A lot of times coming in, you know, because I never had my own show.
Mm.
So I had the blessing and curse of coming in and fitting in.
Mm-hmm.
And
blessing and curse.
Yes, because it's a blessing to come work with talented people. It's a blessing to get paid.
Mm-hmm.
It's a blessing to have those experiences. But it also, as a guest or recurring, you don't mm-hmm. necessarily get the attention. You have to, it's a machine already going. Everyone, relationships are established. You know, character arcs are already established, so mm-hmm. there's not really a lot of time to deal with what you got going on, you know. But that show in particular, there was one of my first episodes, I was trying to give an ad lib. The director didn't really know anything about my history, and she was like, honey, we don't really want you to, you know, don't add your own stuff to it. And Queen Latifah said, excuse me, let him go ahead and do what he wants to do. If we need to reel him, we'll. And I was like,
okay.
Yeah. So that was one of the
flexing.
Yeah, hugely. And I appreciated that immensely. And it changed really the way that I approached a lot of my guest work in that sense that, you know, you get used to being told what to do as an actor. And sometimes you got to, you know, go ahead and risk it. I mean, you know, sometimes it doesn't go over as well if you don't have her there.
But, true. Yeah. So we have heard that you have a role coming up on a new project of Kenya Barris's. Mm-hmm. It's a show called Black Excellence on Netflix. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us anything about it yet?
I can.
Ooh.
I play one of his homeboys from his childhood named Broadway. Love
Broadway.
That. Love that name. Yeah.
That's such a black name, I feel like.
Right?
Uh-huh.
Right? It stands out. It's based on his life, mm-hmm. his family, his experience in the industry over the past few years. This show in particular, I can't wait to see because watching him mirror his personal life with his large, beautiful family and then the industry, the juggling act of a relationship, a marriage, and is going to be incredible.
Yeah.
The fact that he never acted to be able to step in and I mean, dude is talented.
So Kenya's acting in the
show. Yes, he plays himself.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah, yeah, he plays himself. So it was fun.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, I'm excited to see it. So speaking of Kenya Barris and the new black shows that are coming out, what excites you about this new era of black TV?
We own the perspective.
Mm.
There's a difference between being hired to be black and being able to be yourself. And black, you know, one of the things that used to always frustrate me was looking at I did a show a few years ago where the characters were described, the breakdown was incredibly layered for my white co-stars. It was such and such as this and that, and the parents are this, they come from this, they do this, these are their thoughts. She does this, that, and the other thing. She's layered, she does this, sometimes she's upset. These are her thoughts. And then when it came to my character, it was, he's black and he's from South Central. And I'm like, black isn't a character, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the being able to sit down and you know, if you put black people in front of a camera, we're black. That's obvious.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't give you the layers. Yeah. And I think what we're experiencing now is being able to watch us share our layers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's invaluable.
That was so well said. I cannot think of a better stopping point. But we're not done just yet. We like to end with a fun little rapid fire segment.
Okay.
It's always supposed to be rapid fire, but I talk a whole lot. But I'm just going to throw some random questions at you. You just throw some random answers at me.
Okay.
Ready?
Mm-hmm.
Who was your first celebrity crush?
Lisa Bonet. Sorry, I had to weigh out who I'm going to get in trouble with. Okay.
Don't blame us on me when you get home. Right. Your wife's like, oh, so you sensitive and you love Lisa Bonet? Your favorite cartoon from your childhood?
Looney Tunes.
Looney Tunes.
For sure.
I love Looney Tunes. If something happened and a Soul Train line just broke out right now, what move are you doing down the Soul Train line?
The kickworm.
The who?
The kickworm. That's how old I am. That's what we call it.
The kickworm?
Yeah. You know,
is that the thing where you're...
Yeah, you be doing that.
Oh, I've only heard it references the worm, but the kickworm.
Yeah. Well, we used to have to kick to do it, but I mean, maybe it's changed. Everything's shortened now, so... Hmm.
So, if Bumper Robinson, it were possible to pull your black card for something, you know what I mean when I say that? Like, it's a thing that you do, it's just like, you're not black no more. What would it be?
For me, okra.
I also identify okra's slimy.
Okra is disgusting.
Okra
that's like green beans with mucus and snot in it. It's gross, man.
Oh, Jesus, that's too accurate.
It is.
Description.
It is. And I came from a household where they made us eat whatever was on the plate. So.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yes, you did, Mom. You did.
Well, you were in Cleveland, so you didn't have to like eat.
No, I was in L.A. I grew up in L.A. Yeah,
oh,
but they
were
from there, so.
But you've never encountered like a chitlin or anything, right?
Not when I was little. No.
No.
But still okra.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okra.
Okay, you have to eat either a chitlin or an okra. What are you going for?
I'll probably go okra.
You were gonna say
chitlin. Because I already have some spit in my mouth, so.
Yeah.
That would, the mucus of the okra would probably be a good
Right.
This is a gross.
This took a turn that I wasn't, I didn't know this is how we were going to end things.
Man.
I'm sorry.
Right.
I'm sorry.
I'm not hungry, that's for sure.
Hey, me either. So thanks for that. Bumper, you have been, of course, an absolute delight. Thank
appreciate
you for putting
it
up
appreciate
with me
it.
And my goofiness. Uh-huh. Where can people find you and your work? Is there anything you want to plug?
Well, you Black Excellence.
Uh-huh.
Looking forward to that. I have another project coming out on Netflix called SEAL Team, voiceover work.
Okay.
So sort of a de facto home away from home Netflix is, so.
All right.
Loving it.
Yeah. And we'll see you on Netflix.
Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
This is the part of the show where I give metaphorical flowers to something or someone Black that I really, really like. Around here, we call it Tracy's Flowers. Other places, they call it Tracy's Flowers, too. That's the only name of it. Anyway, this week's flowers go to, drumroll please, natural hair! Woo! Shout out to Team Natural. So for most of us, having hair, period, is a journey. Having natural hair is a whole different type of journey, right? Some of us have never had a perm. Some of us have perms and cut them off, like me. I remember that day. I was getting over a boy. I don't want to revisit it. And you know what? Some of us still have perms, and that's okay. Whatever you want to do with your head is your choice. But this is for all of my natural folks out there and the stuff that we go through, because guess what? This shit is hard. It's difficult. Also, my heart is absolutely with you when you are on day 6 of a style. You absolutely have to wash your hair tomorrow, and then you have a date, and you're like, okay, I guess I'm staying up and turning on the TV and twisting my hair. But did you know it's absolutely the worst idea to do your hair when you are angry or when you're rushing? It leads to breakage. It's true. That's the one piece of science that I do know. So, I wrote some haikus to help recenter you when you're doing that Bantu night out and you are just not feeling it in your soul. You're not alone. And these are for you. Detangling my hair. Ouch, my arms are so tired, but gives me muscle. Sick of the bundles, but also sick of wash day. SVU marathon. Is it dry or wet? I can't tell while it's twisted. Poof! Try again next time. Oh no, late for work. But it's okay, I have braids. Thanks, Protective Styles. Shrinkage makes my hair seem much shorter than it is, but I know the truth. Just flat ironed my hair, can't wait to show it off. Oh no, it's raining. Been stuck in my room. Did I see a spider or was that just more hair? Explain to me why bobby pins are everywhere, except when I need them. Thought I could finish twisting my hair before bed. I am such a fool. And so, natural hair, all these flowers are for you. Thanks for all you do. That was a haiku in case y'all didn't know. Everybody, welcome to the end of the episode. So glad you could have joined me. Please get a to-go plate. Here, let me get your coat for you. Wait, don't forget your bus ticket. You're gonna need your bus ticket. It has been a great time. Now you ain't gotta go home, but you gotta get the hell out of here. I have a suggestion of where you can go. Go listen to another episode. You're welcome. This has been Strong Black Legends. This show is a production of Pineapple Street Studios in partnership with Netflix and Strong Black Lead. Executive producers are Max Linsky, Jenna Weiss-Berman, Jasmine Lawson, and Agarinesh Ashagre. Our lead producer is Josh Gwynn, production by Jess Jupiter and Janelle Anderson, with additional production support by Cindy Okereke and Alexis Moore. Our music is by the one and only Don Will. You can follow him online at DJ Don Will. And if you pay him, he'll make you some really great music. I have been your host, Tracy Clayton, and you can find me on Instagram at Broken with Poverty. Come say hi. I love it when y'all do that. Make sure to follow us on all the socials at Strong Black Lead. And if you enjoyed what you heard, if you had a good time, spread the joy and tell a friend. Also, don't forget to rate and subscribe to Strong Black Legends on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever podcasts are sold. Until next time, friends and family, keep shining bright like Normani's future. That child is anointed by God. Okay, bye.